Hello and welcome to the E2I podcast, Voices on the World of Work. This podcast from the European Trade Union Institute offers new perspectives, debates and conversations about ongoing research and education on social Europe, workers' participation, health and safety, the wider labour movement and the world of work. This is E2I podcast. Hello and welcome to E2I podcast, Voices on the World of Work. This is episode 4, COVID-19 and the climate crisis. How are they interlinked and what can we learn from each other? I'm Elisa, Communication Officer here at E2I, and I'm your host for this E2I podcast series on Voices on the World of Work. Today, I'll be joined in by Bela Gaguzzi, Senior Researcher at the E2I. Hi, Bela.
Hello, hello, everybody. Yes, I'm Bela Gaguzzi.
Hi, Bela. How are you doing?
Oh, yeah, thank you very much. Of course, it is an unusual situation, but we are coping with this, yeah?
Yeah, and we are also quite lucky that we are able to work from home and basically not being in touch with a lot of people at this moment, especially with the physical contact, I mean.
Indeed, I think it is not social distancing, but physical distancing.
So indeed.
We need to stick to that.
Yes. Today with you, Bela, we will be talking about the climate crisis because basically, as we have been witnessing and you have been writing about it also for us in a post a few weeks ago, not only COVID-19 has had an impact on the climate crisis, but the two crises, how are they managed? They are very much interlinked, and one crisis can and should have consequences on the other, right?
Yes, definitely they are interlinked very much, but we do not feel this at the moment. We are overwhelmed by this sudden and incredible change that happened to our lives. Out of the blue, we were confronted with this pandemic, realizing day by day how more and more serious this threat is. It took some time. And then we suddenly fell down into this emergency situation. It is a true emergency, mm-hmm. life-threatening and threatening also daily lives and works
So you say those are two emergencies. So you have the COVID emergency and you have the climate emergency. But the COVID emergency, yes, we see it because it's a bit more life-threatening than the climate crisis.
You know what? It came, out, so to say, out of the blue, even if not surprising, because we knew already that there is a vulnerability of mm-hmm. our lifestyles and to having confronted with such a health situation, but still it came, surprising, overwhelmed everything overnight, so to say, mm-hmm. and it was a true emergency, and everybody was realizing this true emergency, and so much so that at the same time we totally forgot about the other emergency, the mm-hmm. climate emergency, the year 2019 and the early 2020 was about climate emergency.
Indeed.
Does everybody still remember Greta Thunberg? It was the Friday for Future marches. So mm-hmm. last year was everything about that. And we were so slowly starting to realize that it is really serious. But then suddenly we got into a situation where everything else was pushed aside. And in a way, rightly so, because it was really, day-to-day emergency. And this is the first thing that makes the two emergency situations so different. That the one, yes?
Yes, then paradoxically,
Those are two emergencies that are also interlinked. So, for instance, we saw later in March these images
Yes.
from the NASA
Yes.
on China,
Exactly.
showing that the pollution has decreased because basically of stopped in production. So, yeah, is this a good thing then, the COVID?
Absolutely. It is not really a good thing. And this is that makes this situation so disturbing and so paradoxic. It is very difficult to deal with it. Because yes, of course, if we look at it, look at these satellite images, and it is not only about Wuhan and then the Hubei province, but the newer images are showing Northern Italy, London, New York, Paris, Madrid, everything clean. And putting the two images beside each other, March 2019 and March 2020, and these are two different worlds. And we also see when we go out in the street that this is a different world than we were used to.
Indeed.
That is really dramatic. But at the same time, it has never been anybody's idea to deal with the climate emergency in a way like that, because it is impossible. If you
So
remember,
yeah, so you mean no, it was nobody's idea to intervene on the climate crisis as we have been intervening on the COVID crisis.
exactly, because a sudden stop of life is not possible. We can do it for a couple of weeks, but can you imagine to extend this situation for 1 year, 2 years, and so on? It is, and it has an incredible sacrifice behind it, because the jobs are disappearing on a massive scale in the US. Now 22 million jobs disappeared suddenly. In Europe, although we have better social systems, and it was positive that also new employment measures like short-time work schemes were set up. So in Europe, it is not so sudden, but we have a huge sacrifice, and there are many people who are struggling with their daily lives, and that has a toll as well. So this is not a way to deal with it. And actually, what I think as a major risk in this situation, that we are coming back to a situation of having a job environment dichotomy or dilemma. That environment indicators are improving, like the pollution and the CO2 emissions, but at the same time, the jobs are destructed. This is not the dilemma we want to be faced. We
So,
never wanted to have a clean environment and a green economy at the expense of jobs. So this is not the case. No, this is not how it should happen.
yeah, and this is exactly what the unions have been saying for years, no? That
Yes,
they and we want a just transition. Can you tell us a bit
exactly.
more so about this? So what do we mean? What do unions mean when we say just transition?
Well, just transition was a concept developed actually by trade unions, but now it became a mainstream concept, and it is part of major international documents like the UNFCCC. It was included into the Paris document, and so on. So it's kind of, so to say, official. And for the Commission, the European Green Deal, it is an integral part of it, the just transition mechanism. And this is already a big improvement. The idea was principally that acknowledging that we have to transform our economy fundamentally, because it cannot be that we are using up all the resources of the planet and we are polluting and emitting the CO2 emissions, causing global warming, the loss of biodiversity, and so on. This is not sustainable. This will kill the planet. It will kill the jobs. Mm-hmm. And it will have actually much more human sacrifice than the COVID crisis. We have to see that.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is, and that is the big difference now, that the COVID crisis poses a direct threat. Even if it is invisible, we don't see the virus, but mm-hmm. it is here. And we are confronted with this here and now. We don't see if we take the car and go somewhere, if we take a plane, we don't see that it is harming anything. We just...
But on the other end, we know that it is harming.
And the other important thing about climate change those who are causing most of the emissions and the pollutions are not exposed to it, because it is the rich countries and the rich who are responsible for most of the pollution. But the effect is more coming to the poor, to other regions. So you don't have this immediate threat. And that's a big difference. And it makes it much more difficult, actually, to deal with the effects of climate change. But actually, we were starting to talk about just transition. So that was the idea coming up to deal with this epochal challenge, to do everything mm-hmm. we can to change our lives, mm-hmm. to change production and consumption patterns, to decarbonize the economy. But mm-hmm. at the same time, this has an effect on daily lives and jobs. So there is a price to pay for that. And the price, and this is about just transition, should be based on fair burden sharing. So it can, the price of that cannot be put on the workers. So if a coal mine mm-hmm. is being closed down, you cannot just let mm-hmm. the workers go away and say goodbye and okay, and it was nice, good, but it's finished, over. You have a responsibility as a state, and also employers have a responsibility to deal with the effects of that, to offer opportunities for a life in a greener way. And kind of also transforming, because often it means transforming jobs, skills and training programs and so on, and also finding new job opportunities. But this and help people during this mm-hmm. process. That is the one part of the just transition, and the other part is the regional aspects, because there are often complete regions that are heavily indeed. Affected, and not to forget,
I can see this. Yeah,
not to forget, there is a distributional effect of it, because climate policies have cost effects. You need to have a higher carbon price. You need to have often higher energy price. In order,
but this has an impact on lower middle income families.
Policies are necessary to deal with this effect and to help those who are more in need, and nobody should be left behind. So this is kind of the basic.
And you said before that the concept of just transition, from being just something that the unions put forward, now is more mainly mainstream, and it was integrated in the Green New Deal. Can you tell, the Green New Deal was launched 2 months ago, right?
Yes,
can you tell
December.
Us a bit more about in December? Yeah. Well, okay, more than a few months ago. Yeah.
Okay, the first launch was made in mid December 2019, and then mm-hmm. the different elements of the European Green Deal package were launched one by one in the months after. And indeed also the initiative about the just transition mechanism that is certainly an integral part of it. And it's well, a big achievement also for trade unions that it is there. This is an opportunity. It is a substantial amount of money made available, mm-hmm. so 100 billion of euros altogether. But only a part of it, less than 10%, is coming from the budget, is kind of real money. It needs to be well boosted by different mechanisms, and some part of that, for example, contributions by member states, is okay. still uncertain. It is not well properly settled, but we have the idea of having this 100 million billion package, which is a good thing. At the same time, if we put it into the perspective to the hundreds of billions and trillions that were suddenly released in very different forms, from guarantees to credit facilities and support mechanisms, everything together, in the wake of the COVID crisis. So here mm-hmm. we also see a little bit of,
a different approach to solve one crisis than the other.
Disproportionately.
Sense of urgency.
And this is where, actually, we would need to build a link that all this huge stimulus mechanisms and facilities mm-hmm. would also serve the longer term deal, the longer term target, greening of the economy, and also the European Green Deal objectives. So the two need to go hand in hand. And
so you should say it would have been nice, if I can rephrase what you said, it would have been nice to see all the stimulus package that the EU institutions released for COVID-19 to be linked to the European Green Deal, so that the two could go hand in hand.
Yes, very much so, very much so. And, and the initial launch of these support mechanisms were, of course, done in an urgency. And it was mm-hmm. really important to have a very quick answer. But it was not yet visible that there is a green element. Let me just have one example for that. The airline industry. Okay, we understand it. That all the airlines are suddenly brought down. So it is the whole industry is paralyzed from one day to another. Yeah. And of course, it is hundreds of thousands of jobs, and of course, it's a vehicle of people's mobility. It's still an important thing, so we cannot live without that. But at the same time, we have to know, and we know already that the incredible increase of airline activity in the last couple of years was not sustainable because air travel is responsible for 3% of all global emissions, and it is mm-hmm. very dynamically growing. It had been growing in the past years. So there had been a problem with the airline industry already. And the question is, can we get back to normal, or would there be some conditionality applied and so on. The other,
so that workers do not pay the price of airline businesses going, for instance, bankrupt. This is it. So we can, what you're saying, maybe we should add conditionality with link to green investment.
Also yes,
to
and
make
also
sure that we have a just transition. Yeah.
Yes, that is certainly, but at the same time, it could lead also to a restructuring of the industry. For example, it came up that several big European airlines are really in the trouble now. For example, Lufthansa. And probably it is about receiving a bailout. And then you can imagine, is it... Maybe they should revise their strategies of the internal flights. Is it necessary to have so many short haul flights in Europe?
Yeah.
And concentrate more on the long haul. So these kind of things. And maybe another example is the automobile industry. We know already that the automobile industry was very much under challenge of multiple transformations. First of all, electrification, and now there is a sudden stop there, and some of the automobile industry lobbies are already keen on having scrapping schemes that you remember we had in the 2009 crisis. That the states are offering money to people to buy new cars. Whether this is a wise measure to have or not, I'm not sure, but I think it would not be a good message.
So what you're saying is that, okay, we have this crisis, COVID-19, which is also and we see it every day, it's also having an economical impact on our society.
Very much.
Now,
incredibly, with
different stimulus packages, governments and the European Commission is trying to, quote unquote, to save the economy. But we need to be more careful and make sure that it goes into the right direction also in terms of the Green New Deal, and making sure that workers do not pay the price.
Yes, 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 exactly. These two things. Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. So there is no way back to normal. So
voila,
not exactly to the same situation as where we started from, because the old normal was not a sustainable normal. So we have to redefine this new normality and try to shape it in a positive way.
Are you seeing, so for instance, yesterday, you've been telling me this before, that the European Commission postponed a study on the EU 2030 goals.
Yes.
In terms of so can you tell us a bit more, because basically, yeah, on one hand there are stimulus packages for the economy, but then on the we don't see a lot, actually we don't see a lot, and even we see counteractive measures trying to stop anything that has to do with climate change, even though the two crises are interlinked.
Exactly, because it was not intentional, but unavoidably, under such a sudden threat to life and jobs, the instinctive logic means to protect jobs and protect, growth, almost at any price. That was actually the first message of these huge packages that had been launched in March in different mm-hmm. countries, that no matter what it takes, we do everything to get back to normal. And there is no money that is too much for that. So everything is possible, and mm-hmm. and we will survive it. And without even thinking on the qualitative or structural effects of that, just pouring money out to get back to things. It was an important message at the beginning, and it was vital to do that, and particularly mm-hmm. in terms of employment. Mm-hmm. But with the time, we also have to realize that there is must be a qualitative and a structural element in that, and that is greening. So, and yes, it is absolutely understandable that the original political agenda had been totally derailed. So we are off track because everybody is concentrating on the imminent pandemic crisis. This necessarily led also to the postponement of the original political agenda, also of the European Commission. So mm-hmm. all the initiatives that were in the working program of the Commission linked to the European Green Deal had now been postponed.
Until after the crisis, COVID-19.
I mean, for the moment, it is until September, and then one by one, some of the measures and initiatives of the Green Deal will then be moved to 2021 also, indeed. But at least from September, the work will resume. And one very important element is the European Climate Law and the European emission targets for 2030. Because there had already been an understanding that the current emission targets of the EU for 2030, that is 40% greenhouse gas reduction, is outdated. It is not even in line with the Paris Agreement. So it needs...
Because it's too soft.
Yes, because with that, we will not arrive to the zero carbon objective that is the overall objective of the whole Green Deal. So in order to go down to zero net zero carbon by 2050, we need to be more ambitious in the shorter term and also by 2030. And this is inevitable. It is recognized, and it was already foreseen that the target will be raised to 55%, from 40 to 55% reduction. And this is actually still the plan.
But some would say, well, you know, with the lockdown, if we continue like this, actually with carbon emissions basically going on a standstill, because production is very low in Europe, then we will be able to achieve this sooner.
But there
this
are,
could be an
there
argument.
Not exactly, but there are two parts of this story. The one is indeed that due to this lockdown and shutdown, the carbon emissions for this year will be excellent. It will be more than 10%. At the European level, and already some early estimates were showing that on global level there would be a reduction of 4% of total global emissions we had in 2019. Mm-hmm. So 4% on global level, that is incredibly high. It is history. It's never happened before. So it's huge. And in Europe, it will be big as well. but this is a one-off thing.
And as you said before, this is no solution to the climate crisis.
Yeah, well, sure, because if we don't, if nothing else happens, there will be a rebound, and next year, well, we will get back to normal, so to say, overshooting even the earlier trend. So that is certainly not. So I mean, it helps, so to say, to some extent, but that is not solving the problem itself. Mm-hmm. So this means that the 2030 target must be more ambitious, and this is recognized. There is an understanding about it. It is. It's only that still needs to be done. And there was also an agreement that there will be a feasibility study before that.
From the European Commission.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And now there is a debate and a consultation where many interest groups are emphasizing that during this emergency we have now, with the recession, we are not in the position to become more ambitious with mm-hmm. the climate objective because it costs too much. Mm-hmm. So, and then there are, it is not yet really explicitly expressed that they don't want to go to 55%, but stressing more the feasibility study and see what the effects are and gaining time with that. So there is now at least a danger that there will be a watering down of the climate objectives because of the COVID crisis.
Yeah, I can see this. And this is not good news, but, well, at least, let's say, you will be following this up, and then we could talk later on in 1 or 2 months about this and to follow this up with you, because you will be following the energy and the climate crisis closely, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
Now, Béla, a few words on Hungary. Because with the different colleagues in the previous podcast, we have been talking about, their views on the different countries of origin. You're originally from Hungary. Yes. Well, what has been happening there is frightening to us all. They have approved a new set of rules last week, if I'm not mistaken. What can you tell us about this?
Well, it is not a surprise anymore that Hungary is posing some challenges to the European Union in the way it is, at least the Hungarian government, as Orbán is trying to redefine democracy. Mm-hmm. He announced that illiberal democracy is mm-hmm. the way to go. And there is a power concentration in the country that is even without the COVID crisis, was often criticized and was actually posing a threat to basic European values. Yeah. Because the checks and balances, the way the constitutional court, the judiciary, the role of the parliament, the role of the media, freedom of speech was treated was actually not in line with European
with the rule of law and fundamental rights. Yeah,
exactly.
And what can you tell us about the economic package that was released?
Well, before that, to mention that it is understandable that the crisis posed by the pandemic in each European country and in any country, it involves certain power concentration, or at least concentration of competencies, mm-hmm. Focusing of competencies to deal with the emergency. That mm-hmm. happens in any country.
Yeah.
The novelty in Hungary in that regard was that the Hungarian government was securing extraordinary powers in terms of governing by decree during the crisis, but done in a way without a timeline, or without confining this extraordinary powers to the specificity of the crisis, to a limited period. And then looking also the track record of the government in the last 10 years, it is no wonder that there is a concern that these concentrated power structures will just be kept on.
Yes.
And it was not only the governing by decree, but it was also further limiting of media freedom and free speech, using the excuse of the corona crisis.
Yes.
So that is a concern, and certainly it needs to be monitored and also addressed. And on top of these new competencies to respond to the crisis, there is, of course, a broader context of using the crisis as an opportunity for power concentration.
Yeah.
We know it very well that playing with the fear of the population is very attractive for populist politicians and governments. That is the populist playbook. And this already happened with the migration.
And Hungary is not alone.
Yes, not this. Alone in that. And this is why it is dangerous, so to say,
yes,
for the
absolutely.
Whole of Europe. And that means that exploiting these fears that exist, yes, people are in fear of their own lives and
absolutely.
So on. And playing on that, with that, is, well, it's a risky game, and it is not necessarily a good thing. And certainly this is, the situation is also amplifying nationalistic trends, because it can be presented in a way that the danger is coming from outside.
Mm-hmm.
It is external. It is foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the country exposed to a threat that is mm-hmm. coming from outside. And our government is to defend us from this external threat. Yes, closing borders, building scapegoats, and so on. So,
And do you see this rhetoric too when it comes to the economic package that was released? Or
yes, exactly. But the last thing before that to say is that the threat in this context is also Europe. So
mm-hmm.
Europe and the European Union is also being blamed, first of all, of not helping, and in a broader sense. So this is amplifying tendencies that were already there before, but it was seen as an opportunity. Yes.
Yeah.
So the economic package, certainly there is one. So the Hungarian government was also realizing that they need to respond to the economic consequences, and they are doing it, so to say, in their way, unorthodox way, as it was already the case in the 2009 crisis. Mm. The two main principles are, first of all, fiscal discipline, keeping fiscal discipline and not letting budget deficit explode or mm-hmm. or going yeah. up uncontrolled. So the government is keen to stay below the 3% stability and growth criterion, which is actually now at the European scale is put on hold. But
yes, exactly.
Still they insist to be prudent economically. That's the one thing. And the other thing is that the philosophy is workfare instead of welfare. So they don't want to provide welfare goodies to everybody mm-hmm. and anybody. Mm-hmm. The principle is work-based society mm-hmm. and support everything that is linked to work and not, so to say, to the lazy people. But what mm-hmm. this means, actually, that it is, again, not really targeting the poor. It is, the target is more the middle class, so to say.
Absolutely. Okay, I can see this.
And this is a concern, and it is reflecting also the logic that Labour court had, that it is not very worker friendly, and certainly not really addressing the lowest income and the most vulnerable people.
But on the other end, I read that healthcare and workers get a one payment, one-off payment of more or less €1,500.
Yes,
isn't this a good thing?
That is extraordinary, and €1,500 in Hungary is actually really a big amount. So that is quite substantial, and it is a good and important message. And it is positive. We also have to see, and there is a rationale in that. There is an incentive also to keep these healthcare personnel in the country.
Yeah,
because
I see that.
There had been, in the last couple of years, the trend of outward labor mobility, and certainly many people from the healthcare sector were going to work in Western countries, Germany mm-hmm. or the UK. And that is also part of European solidarity, that there were tendencies in certain countries to open, well, a little bit to stimulate more labor mobility of healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. mean, because everybody is in need now of nurses.
Absolutely. And so by giving this, they make sure that they stay in the country.
Yeah, well, at least it is an incentive for that as well. It is an acknowledgement as opposed to an incentive. But one thing also to emphasize here, that indeed, there Hungary also would have some sort of short working time arrangement.
Ah, okay.
It is 70% of the wages mm-hmm. Would be then be covered by the government, but it is limited to 3 months. So it is not indefinite it is for 3 months, and the companies need to apply for that scheme. And on top of that, it is those who are working in research and development, engineers or any other, they get a 40% wage subsidy irrespective of short-term work or not. So they just get a boost on their pay.
But thank you very much, Béla. This, I think, for the time being, what you have been telling us about Hungary is quite enlightening, and especially because, well, we are, at least from my point of view, very much focused on what's happening in our own country, or at least in our neighboring countries. But it's very difficult to get hands-on information on Eastern European countries, first because of the language, and then because of also access to information. So if you allow, maybe again, when we will be talking to you next, you can give us an update, hopefully positive, on the situation in Hungary, because we will find it, and I'll find it very, very interesting. Now, the section on good news. Do you have some for us talking about Hungary?
Yeah. So, what I always like to do is to go out for cycling, because it's just the only thing you can still do without limitation. And we are also privileged in the lockdown that the weather is simply so good, which never happened in Belgium. So you can imagine that after the lockdown, it will be rain and wind and everything coming back. But at least now it's nice. And in a wider sense, I think it is really a life experiment. To explore new things and to deal with things from new perspectives, it's quite exciting.
So this is the way you're surviving lockdown, by cycling. Belgium,
that is
in Belgium, difference between other, between, for instance, from Italy, where you are not allowed to go outside unless you have a good reason. In Belgium, we are still quite lucky that if we respect the social distancing, or, as you said before, the physical distancing, we are allowed to go out and do cycling, or at least a walk in the park, which is actually highly incentivized because of the good weather, and just to keep a bit of a mental health, positive mental health attitude towards everything that's going on. Fine. Thank you very much, Béla. It was very interesting talking to you today about the climate crisis, what's the EU response, what are the interlinkages between the climate crisis and COVID-19 crisis, what can they learn from each other, and finally, a word on Hungary. It was very, very much talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you really for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to E2I Podcast, Voices on the World of Work with Béla Galguzzi. If you like this episode and want to know more about it, check our website, e2i.org, or follow us on social media and on anchor.fm/E2I. Join us for the next episode when we talk with Ilaria Costantini, always from the E2I, on training and trade union education in times of crisis. Is the online available solution? Stay safe out there. From Brussels, this is all. Bye-bye. Ciao.